Hello, and thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight. I'm Brandis Friedman. Here's what we're looking at.
Abusing the power of the National Guard is not about protecting public safety.
Chicagoans brace for a possible deployment of the National Guard as ICE activity ramps up. We get reaction from local Congress members.
You want to be the best team out there tonight.
What to expect from the Bears this year as the team kicks off the season this evening against the Vikings.
If you've read about the theater, none of that can quite prepare you for what you see when you step inside.
And renewed momentum to restore the Uptown Theater as the iconic venue hits its centennial. First off tonight, Homeland Security officials are announcing a new immigration operation in Illinois. The agency says Operation Midway Blitz will target, quote, criminal illegal aliens who flocked to Chicago. The action comes after weeks of President Donald Trump promising to send ICE agents and possibly the National Guard to the city. Here's the president earlier today.
I don't know why Chicago isn't calling us saying, please give us help. When you have over just a short period of time, 50 murders and hundreds of people shot, and then you have a governor that stands up and says how crime is just fine. It's really crazy.
Joining us are Congressman Jonathan Jackson, a Democrat representing parts of Chicago's South Side and South Suburbs, Congressman Jesus Chuy Garcia, a Democrat representing parts of Chicago's Southwest Side and Southwest Suburbs, and Congresswoman Delia Ramirez, a Democrat representing parts of Chicago's West Side. We also invited the Republican Congress members from Illinois, but they either declined or did not reply. We thank the three of you for fitting us in, because I know there are votes happening as well. Congresswoman Ramirez, I want to come to you first, because this new operation, Midway Blitz, it is clearly aimed at Chicago. DHS says that it is targeting specific people that it has ID'd as, quote, gang members, drug traffickers, rapists, sharing mugshots of these folks, saying that they have been released back onto the streets of Illinois under Governor J.B. Pritzker's sanctuary policies. What do you make of this new effort from DHS?
I think it's very clear for us that what he's trying to do, he's trying to stoke fear at every corner, every possibility. And so he goes on and he puts pictures of people to be able to justify his terror force that he's forming. I mean, just think about it. He's not talking about using USCIS, the department that's supposed to be processing visas, to create a police force where they're now going to be carrying guns to go after people. This is not about safety. It's about freaking everyone out and putting people in such positions that they don't come out and protest or demand community safety.
Representative Jackson, the White House and DHS, they claim that 11 undocumented men have been released back into the city by local law enforcement despite having criminal records. Who's responsible there? Should ICE be waiting outside of prisons and jails, or should Cook County or the state communicate with ICE? Since it sounds like Democrats and Republicans can agree that immigrants who commit crime should be deported.
Well, anyone that breaks as a violent offender should be dealt with in a proper manner so that we have public safety. Democrats, Republicans, we all agree on that. When the president is trying to target Chicago, calling people illegal and talking about immigration, we know that this is hype. We know that even his facts, they're not facts, they're wrong. There weren't 50 people killed this past weekend. There were 54 shot, and that number is way too high. It's not acceptable. If one person is shot, if one person's killed, that's wrong. But there were 8 people killed. It was 2 blocks. It was a half a block from my house, from my office, where there were 2 of those mass shootings. So we live in this violence. We understand if the president wants to be helpful, he should coordinate with the governor, with the mayor, and also have the respect of the local police that are enforcing the law so that we can do better. And we need the aid that was already promised to the city that he's now retracted. He cut the funding to enhance our violence prevention.
Congressman Garcia, also today, the Supreme Court, in a 6-3 decision, cleared the way for ICE agents to conduct sweeping immigration operations, saying that while ethnicity is not a reason on its own for reasonable suspicion, it is a, quote, relevant factor when taken with other factors that ICE agents are considering to stop someone. What is your reaction to that decision by the Supreme Court?
This is a radical departure by the highest court from decisions that have been made at the district level, at the appellate level as well, disregarding all of the circumstances and why those decisions at the lower court level were made. They've basically given a green light to ICE to continue to racially profile, ethnically profile where people work, where people live, where people are catching public transportation, to profile them and then to interrogate them, to handcuff them, and then to deport them. Over the weekend, we know of 13 people who were apprehended either in Chicago, mostly on the southwest side, or in suburban communities, and they don't fit the profiles of the press release that was put out today by DHS. There is an effort to paint everyone as a criminal. It is rooted in the false narrative that Donald Trump has been writing since he first declared for the presidency, and right now, they're picking on Latinos, they're picking on the Mexican-American community as we approach the celebration of the annual Independence Day celebrations. This is to intimidate and to control.
The president has been threatening to send in the National Guard for some weeks now, but he hasn't confirmed when it would happen. Reports here locally are that there were three arrested by ICE over this weekend. Representative Ramirez, what does this tell you, this continued uncertainty about the deployment of troops and ICE agents to Chicago?
Yeah, I mean, look, he is saying that he's going to send the National Guard today, then he says he's going to send it to New Orleans. He uses the National Guard as if they were indispensable or to be discarded in many ways. But the reality is we do know that the Broadview Processing Center is being prepared to expand immigration enforcement. And we do know that they're preparing to send a substantial number of ICE agents, more than they already have here, to Chicago to continue this campaign of terror. And it's to be able to create the violent confrontation that seeds division and justifies their tactics. And so I want to make sure that people understand this, that whether it's the National Guard or it's getting more agents here, it's about creating fear for innocent families. And that's why we have to continue to organize and make sure that people know their rights.
The president posted on Truth Social over the weekend. Of course, a lot of people saw this, referring to Chicago as, quote, Chipocalypse Now, saying, quote, I love the smell of deportations in the morning. Chicago about to find out why it's called the Department of War. Trump has used this imagery in the past, of course, calling the city, quote, a hellhole, quote, a war zone. Representative Jackson, what do you make of an American president referring to another American city that way?
Well, that's beneath the dignity of the office. That was quite insulting and very disgusting. This isn't a game. This isn't a joke. There are some people that might have overstayed their visas. We can deal with this in a humane and a normal way. And there are other people that are violent criminals that we can't have law enforcement continue to enforce the law. But what he should be focused on is there are 30,000 deaths from handguns across the United States every year. We can clean up these guns across America. America has a violence problem. If he wants to be of help, I would also recommend that he sends in the Center for Disease Control. This violence ought to be called a disease. It's nationwide. We know 8 of the 10 states that have the most per capita violence are in Republican states. He needs not polarize this, racialize this. He started with DEI with African Americans, and he went on to Hispanics and Mexicans. Then he went on to Koreans the other day and the Asian community. This is a very hateful administration. And we know that Secretary Hegseth is not qualified to be Secretary of Defense or Secretary of War. We need a peace department, not a war department, on our American citizens.
So you do have the Department of Homeland Security, and it announced this Operation Midway Blitz on X today in honor of a woman named Katie Abraham. She was killed by an undocumented immigrant. Here's a bit of what her family said.
Why do these people who break these laws, who are not U.S. citizens, deserve due process? Because again, Katie got nothing. She got death.
These are not the productive folks we want to bring into the country. You want to build a country on migrants? Probably not the guy you want to stand behind to build a country.
Congressman Garcia, backers of Trump's efforts say that Chicago's sanctuary city laws, it prevents law enforcement from responding to victims of or incidents of violence that are carried out by people who are undocumented. And there are folks who support President Trump offering to send in the National Guard. What do you say to those folks who believe that that there is a problem here, people who've been victimized by crime and think that more needs to be done here and that current policy isn't doing enough?
Well, first of all, my heart goes out to the victim of that DUI incident that took her life, to her and to her family. Secondly, with respect to the effort to try to justify the sending in of these agents or the National Guard, if you want to fight crime, you have to collaborate. You have to work with local law enforcement. That would be the Chicago Police, other law enforcement in the state of Illinois. And the people who have been driving the crime rate down in Chicago for the past 2+ years, those are violence prevention, violence intervention workers. That's why crime in Chicago, to a great degree, is going down. This is a post-pandemic era as well. To try to scapegoat a city because people in the city didn't vote for you, they don't like your policies, is a terrible effort to try to intimidate, to sow fear, and yes, to carry out an authoritarian move to have people succumb to every wish that you wish to take, whether it violates the Constitution, due process, and the rule of law.
30 seconds left, Representative Ramirez, and I know you've got to go vote. If the president were to send troops to Chicago, what, if anything, can lawmakers in Washington do to respond?
Look, I have an amendment in the NDAA now. It's an amendment that prohibits the president from using armed forces, including the National Guard, to be able to do ICE enforcement unless Congress authorizes it. I want that amendment to come to the floor in order, and I want to still vote for it. Because the reality of the National Guard's mission is not for this.
All right. That's where we'll have to leave it. Best of luck to all of you, representatives, congresspeople, Jonathan Jackson, Jesus Chury Garcia, and Delia Ramirez. Thank you.
Thank you.
And we're back with more right after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Jim and Kay Mabee family, the Polk Brothers Foundation, and the support of these donors.
The Chicago Bears are kicking off a new era tonight. They're taking the field under new head coach Ben Johnson, who is coming in to hopefully turn around a franchise that's faced years of disappointment. Spotlight will also be on quarterback Caleb Williams, who's entering his second year after an up-and-down rookie season. Joining us now to look ahead at that season is James Big Cat Williams, former offensive lineman for the Chicago Bears. Welcome back. Good to see you.
Good to see you, too.
Okay, so Ben Johnson, formerly an offensive coordinator for the Detroit Lions, comes to Chicago with some big expectations and a big price tag. What do you think his biggest challenge is going to be with the Bears?
Well, I think his biggest challenge is going to be figuring out exactly what Caleb is good at. Because at least during the beginning of the season, you need to run things that Caleb is comfortable with, the throws that he makes well, the reads that he can handle so he can get the ball out of his hands quick. And it's going to be a growing process. I don't think that week one will look like week six. I think they should progress as time goes along. But that's going to take not only the two of them meshing and figuring out exactly what works, but the team around them growing as the season goes on.
Any concerns about a first-time head coach?
Always. Always, because he's never had to deal with the entirety of the team. As an offensive coordinator, you deal with the offense, you deal with, you know, all the different pieces of the offense, but now you're scheduling things. You have to make sure that everything's running right, not only offensively, but defensively, special teams. You're being pulled in a lot of different directions, and this is going to be a first for him.
Then there's Caleb Williams, of course. You know, he came into the league with some sky-high hype. First year, his rookie year, didn't quite live up to all of that. What do you think went wrong last season, and what does he need to do to turn it around this time?
I think last season as a rookie player, I'm not sure exactly what went wrong in the building, you know, but you heard a lot of reports come out of the building as far as the different things that went on with the coaching staff, the lack of ability to protect a player like that, his inability to get the ball out of his hands quick. So, I mean, these are things that they're focusing on now that Ben Johnson is going to focus on. But I don't know how much focus they put into these things his first year when he really needed them. And now he's going into another offensive system, and it's learning from scratch all over again.
Okay, so there is this three-part series on Substack by Go Long. It's called House of Dysfunction. Three parts, right? They report having interviewed more than 30 former executives, scouts, coaches, players, and they report that Williams wasn't listening to coaches, changing plays, not listening in the locker room, skipping film sessions, whole bunch of stuff. What do you make of reporting like that and what you're hearing come out of that?
Well, I think when you have 30 people and no one's willing to put their name on it, it's something that I frown upon a little bit, because you don't know whether it is people that are disgruntled for some odd reason or if they actually knew what was going on. Now, if they actually knew what was going on in the building, in the locker room, on the field, then those are some disturbing things, because this is a guy that you brought in to lead your franchise, and you need someone to lead your franchise that has that ability to be a leader, to ask questions when questions need to be asked. You know, you hear about the he didn't know how to watch film. Well, who did you talk to about watching film? You know, you have all these people in your back pocket as far as people that are willing to help you. Why didn't you go to any of these people? So I think it's a lot all balled up into one, and eventually it's all going to rise to the top and everyone's going to find out exactly what went on. But it's going to be a process, and he's going to have to figure out how to shut out all this noise and become the player that everybody expected him to be.
Okay, so the Bears, they've also drafted tight end Colston Loveland. How might adding that extra target for Williams, how's that going to help them out on the field this season?
Oh, anytime you add a tight end like that, it's kind of like a security blanket for a young quarterback. He's your guy that's going to be in the middle of the field. He seems to run good routes, has an ability to catch the ball. So, you know, a safety blanket that he can rely on when things break down, or when they need those, you know, through the air short yardage plays, that's somebody that's going to be there for them.
So last time the Bears were at the top of the NFC North, that was in 2018 when they secured the division title. That season ended, of course, with the infamous double doink that we all remember when they missed that field goal.
Double doink,
I'm sorry. I'll let it go next season.
Okay.
But how do you think the Bears stack up against their division rivals?
They're still young. You've got a first-time head coach. Green Bay is looking better. Minnesota is a team that's on the rise. Detroit is a team that seems to have the personnel, but they lost a lot of the coaching staff, so you really don't know how they're going to do. I think they're kind of in the middle of the pack right now, and depending on how they progress through the season will depend on how far they're able to go in the season.
How far do you think they'll go in the season, Big Cat?
Well, nine wins is, I think, a good season. I don't know if it's enough to get you into the playoffs, but it's an improvement, and it proves that they're on the right track. Whether or not they're going to make it to the playoffs, it's hard because, like you said, this division is stacked right now. So
yeah.
It's going to be a job.
Never betting against the Bears, I know. How important is it for them to win against the Vikings today?
It's the first game of the season. I think it's big for their own personal outlook. It's big for the morale of the team. In the long run, it's just another game at the beginning of the season. But, you know, it's Monday Night Football. Everybody's watching. There are no other games on TV. So, you know, you want to go out and you want to put you want to be the best team out there tonight. So I think it's important to them. But it's not the end all to be end if they lose this game.
Game predictions?
I'm going to wear my Bears hat and I'm going to go 24-21.
Okay, write that down, everybody.
Yeah, don't write it down.
Don't write it down. You just said it right here. Okay, James Big Cat Williams, thank you so much. Good to see you.
Thank you. Good to see you, too.
And we're back right after this. Chicago's landmark Uptown Theater just turned 100. And like a lot of 100-year-olds, the old girl's got some aches and pains, but it's also got a dedicated community hoping to see the long-vacant movie palace restored and brought back to life. The theater's also being celebrated in a just-released book. As our Nick Blumberg reports, the building's owner and its many supporters are hopeful the momentum around the Uptown Centennial will finally get the massive project off the ground.
The 46,000-square-foot Uptown Theater opened its doors in August 1925 with much fanfare. Dave Sifchak's been coming to the theater since he was a kid. Now he's the building's caretaker.
The idea of the theater was to make the common man feel like a king or a queen, like he was visiting Europe or Old Spain, as the design of the building indicates.
The Uptown boasts more than 4,300 seats, gorgeous architectural details everywhere you turn, and not one, but three lobbies, including a cavernous showstopper of a main entrance.
And this staircase has been described as one of the grandest staircases ever in a movie palace.
It also had state-of-the-art heating and cooling, a nursery for mothers, a rotating selection of fine art, and beautiful mood lighting.
If you've read about the theater or seen photos of it, of its interior, none of that can quite prepare you for what you see when you step inside.
Robert Lorizel and Andy Pierce's new book, The Uptown, is a treasure trove, tracing the theater's many lives, the history of the neighborhood, and the ongoing preservation and restoration efforts.
And these immense spaces have just so many details of architecture and art, little faces on the columns, sculptures, little flares of architecture. Pretty much every corner of the building has something like that to grab your attention.
This is the moment where we can bridge the generations. We've got people who remember going there and can share their experience and why it's important to them. The rest of us see the opportunity and the potential.
Over the years, the Uptown went from a grand movie palace to a concert venue. Longtime concert promoter Jerry Michelson started booking shows there in 1975.
This was the place that everybody wanted to play and will be, again, the place that everybody wants to perform at. And back then it was, you know, Grateful Dead, Prince, Springsteen, a number of times. Just loved it.
But Michelson says he watched as the building's owner at the time let it fall into disrepair. It closed in 1981. Michelson bought it in a foreclosure auction in 2008 and says he's determined to see it reopen.
As I like to say, you know, we're not chasing a dream, we're building a plan.
For years, Chicagoans have been working to preserve and restore the city's historic theaters. Last year, the Romova in Bridgeport reopened its doors after a $30 million overhaul. But the massive scope of the Uptown, not to mention decades-old water damage, means a much bigger price tag, about $190 million, according to Michelson's team.
This has to be a public-private partnership. This theater is an asset to the city of Chicago and, most importantly, Uptown.
COVID scuttled an earlier renovation effort backed by public funding. Michelson's confident he can pull together a mix of public and private support to bring the Uptown back to life. In the meantime, Pierce and Lorizel's new book can not only give you a look inside, but take you on a trip back in time. And so can a pop-up exhibit at the Chicago History Museum, where the authors did extensive research.
I can't stress enough the importance of those archives to understand the building and see it new. We could confirm different entertainers who appeared there, such as the Marx Brothers and Duke Ellington and others. We had this oral history, and we were able to verify that through records and then share it.
By the way, if you notice, the frame behind me looks a little empty. Well, that's because it is, but it's on purpose. Pretty soon, the newest Uptown community portrait celebrating the theater's centennial will take its place right here on the wall.
It's just heartwarming, and it's reassuring to see that support. We just have to figure out how to do it.
For Chicago Tonight, I'm Nick Blumberg.
The new book, The Uptown, is available now. The pop-up exhibit at the Chicago History Museum runs through January 4th, and they hope to have the new community portrait up sometime this month. For her part, 46th Ward Alderwoman Angela Clay tells us she's open to city support, potentially in the form of revenue from an existing TIF district that includes the theater, as long as there's private funding involved, too. She wants to see the theater become not just a venue, but a community hub and a source of jobs for the neighborhood. Got much more of that on our website. And that's our show for this Monday night. Join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 10. We explore whether an expected surge of Department of Homeland Security agents in Chicago could provoke wide-scale civil unrest. Now for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Brandis Friedman. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that supports inclusionary excellence throughout the legal profession.